purport by Srila Prabhupada. The elements of cosmic creation are all matter and have no potency to increase in volume unless entered into by the Lord in his plenary portion. This means the matter does not increase or decrease unless it is spiritually touched. Matter is a product of spirit and increases only by the touch of spirit. The entire cosmic manifestation has not assumed its gigantic form by itself, as wrongly calculated by less intelligent persons. As long as spirit is within matter, matter can increase as needed, but without the spirit, matter stops increasing. For example, as long as there is spiritual consciousness within the material body of a living entity, the body increases to the required size, but a dead material body which has no spiritual consciousness stops increasing. In the Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, importance is given to the spiritual consciousness, not the body. The entire cosmic body increased by the same process that we experience in our small bodies. One should not, however, foolishly think that the individual infinitesimal soul is the cause of the gigantic manifestation of the universal form. The universal form is called the Virat Rupa because the Supreme Lord is within it in his plenary portion. Om Gyanatimarandasya Gyananjara Shalakaya Chakshur Unmalitam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Interestingly, I used to assume that the Virat Rupa, which is the universal form, that somehow Virat meant universal, but in fact it means splendid, it means magnificent, it comes from Viraj. So the point being made here is that you've got something you don't normally see. Most people don't see or acknowledge, and that is the spirit and the Atma. And the very first question, the very first point that Shukadeva Goswami makes when he was inquired by King Parikit when he was dying, what was the first? He praised Parikit because he put a very good question to him, in his estimation, as to the nature, a question about Krishna. And so he praised that he's Varyan Eshite Prashna. That Prashna, that question, is the best question. And particularly because it is lokahita, that is, that it will do you good. It's of benefit to you, to everyone. Lokahita, everyone, benefits everyone. But on the other hand, if you go into W.H. Smith's Waterstones, you see a lot of different topics for talking about, which are unrelated to spiritual topics. It's very diverse. I mean, everybody's coming out with a speculation everywhere and anywhere. How we can be peaceful, how, what is to your benefit, self-help books, story books, and it's Shrutavyadini Rajendra. So if there was a reference point from which you would observe as a devotee what you see in newspapers, what you see in talking heads on the news, and so on, this is all Shrutavyadini Rajendra. Nunam Shanti Sahasrasa. But the question is, who is it that does that? Who is it that becomes very fascinated by the politics, all the different goings on in the world, the different ways you can perceive the world? And that is this answer that Shukadeva gives in his first talking, when he begins to talk. It's the second canto he starts talking. And what he says is that those who are apashyatam atmatattvam, that those who are simply indifferent to atmatattva, that they can't perceive it. And the question is, how is it that you get into the trap where you really find no interest in the self, the atma, and as has been pointed out here? Not to get diverted, but if you get somebody looking at your car, if it's broken down the engine, then, and you're not a mechanic, but they're a mechanic, right? So they're looking in the engine and they're thinking, oh, I see, the water pump's gone. Or, you know, the fan belt's gone. Or you've got a leak in your radiator. So it's he sees it instantly. Your AA guy, he comes out, you're stuck at the side of the road, he comes out. Looks in the engine, and miraculously, within a couple of seconds, he's analyzed what's going on. He's seeing the engine in a different way that we see the engine. We're not aware of all that's going on. So the question is, what draws us back from a spiritual pursuit? It's the material advertising, the material promise of a happy home and a happy home life. And indeed, that was the point that Shukadeva Goswami made. Apashatam Atmatvam. Who is the Apashatam? Who doesn't see the importance of the self, of the merits of self-realization, Atmatattva, understanding that the soul enters the universe, the great soul, that is the Parabrahman, that is Krishna, Vishata enters there, and that's why it's all going on. Maya jakshena prakriti, same word actually. Yasmin lokas charachara. Maya jakshena prakriti suyate sacharachara. So it's the same point being made here, except in a different way. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Maya jakshena, by my vision, by my akshas, his eyes, he supervises and controls, governs, the charas and the archeras. The charas, the movable, living things, and the archeras, the stationary things, everything. So there's a vision for you, a different type of vision. But you become, as it were, indifferent to it, perhaps inured to the idea. The more you become fascinated by perhaps the Ideal Homes exhibition, for example, that they have every year in London. Because it, or, you know, anything that, you know, have this wonderful house, this swimming pool as well, even, you know, a jacuzzi. But it's all kind of a griha, meaning a place, a dwelling. And this interest in the dwelling, in fact, again, if a grihe shu, does anyone know what that means, apart from just a griha? There's two words, actually, is a griha and an eshu. And an eshu, the eshu means interest in, going towards, an obsession with. A griha eshu. He wants a house, and that's the preoccupation. One wants a house. And if you think about it, it's a very succinct way of describing what goes on in general, because that is the case. I mean, everybody, their concern in their livelihood, what they do for a career, I've got to get a house. Well, I live in a van, actually. So, I don't know if anybody knew that. But so, because it's a preoccupation that distracts one from, and it's an ambition, it's a hope that there is will-o'-the-wisp, there is some steadiness, there is some sanctuary in family, friendship, and love. Not to say they don't have their merits, but the claim of Rupa Goswami is that if you happen to see Krishna and you develop a taste for Krishna, then you'll no longer be particularly interested in those things. So instead of there being this sort of myriad, unlimited things you could chat about and talk about, and it goes on and on and on outside of Krishna consciousness, the focus is for one's good, and one feels actually uplifted by a focus in Krishna consciousness. So here we have Krishna making it very clear, Maitreya making it very clear that there is this Lord who enters into the world, and that is how it is created, that is how it comes about. And when you are dealing with, because the whole mission of Krishna consciousness is to give this information to others for the lokahita, for the benefit of the others. But I don't think you can really understand others without delving a little bit into the way that they think, and about what is the concurrent, what is the current kind of way that drift, that the Weltanschauung, the consciousness of people is going. And it is towards a spirituality, because there's this huge movement of mindfulness and an acceptance of a divine self, and of principles that the Bhagavad Gita espouses also. The only difference is that somehow what is omitted is the personality of the Parabrahman. Yes, there's we too say, we talk about Brahman, the great, but in Krishna consciousness it's a bit more specific. There is no such understanding with those who have this kind of inclination to be spiritually inquisitive, but they don't get to the param gati, they don't get to the point. I was fascinated to hear one such current luminary talking about how could the world possibly be, how could it be created by a good God? Because you see so many bad things happening in the world, especially today. The disasters, the upheavals all over the place, geographically, internationally, that are going on. How could you say that there was any good God behind that? Any loving God that would create such a disastrous set of circumstances, an environment to live in? And you get a lot of notables, and I could mention a name here because he is quite well known as Stephen Fry, a very prominent atheist. Who and his problem is this. It's the same thing. It's that how could there be any justification of a God who loves everyone? That doesn't sound right, because, and you know, even if you look at the animal kingdom, you know, the way that animals leap on each other and devour each other in the jungle or whatever, and we're all food for another living being and so on. Well, the answer is quite simply that there is another purpose, because that is what is being missed is that they've still got this griheshu, this tendency to want to stay here in the world, instead of they wanting moksha, because that is the goal of Vedic thought, to get out of here. Yes, you're right. And it enlightens us also to give us the bigger picture that inasmuch as you identify with this world, then you're attached to it, obviously. So when you're going to lose something, you're going to think, oh, that's terrible. Now I'm suffering because of this transient nature of everything you might, the very thing you might get and that you've always wanted, it will go. And so the miseries of the world, adiatmic, adidaivic, adibhautik, they are definitely acknowledged in the Vedas. No question that they are not clearly, yes. It is a place of dukkhalayam. And that's a great word, that one, because, you know, like if, I think I mentioned it in the last class, actually, but anyway, I'll mention it again. Himalaya. Hima, snow, alaya, the place of, the resident, the area, the region of snow. Alaya meaning region, and hima meaning snow. So the Himalayas are the mountains of the Himalayas, that's why they call that. There's a lot of snow around. And similarly, the world is dukkhalayam. Dukkha, meaning misery, alaya. They might say, imagine if you went to a town called Misery Town. Then that's what this world is. It's a place, it is the region of unhappiness and sufferings of all kinds. And but at the end of the day, you've got to get to grips with this Atma Tattvam, which is that the self is a never-ending thing. Not only do we, as individual spirits, not end, but we never not were, which is the great double negative that Krishna uses in the Bhagavad Gita, as that one, you know, natvaivaham. Natvaivaham, jatu, na asam. Never not be, never not were. The chaiva, na bhavishyama, future, bhavishya, to become, na bhavishya. You'll never not be. So not only will you never not be, but you never were not. So it's a good way of explaining eternality, the permanence of the self, the Atma, and the thing, the very thing, which is all over the shop in the Vedic literatures about the eternality of the soul and how Atata Brahma Jigyasa, but no one's interested at all. There's a huge distraction. So this is being emphasized here. In the same way that this world is animated by a spirit, then what animates us? And when we pass away, they throw your body away. It may have been very beautiful and very rich, but no one decorates a dead body, unless it's at a funeral. But I mean, it's a valueless thing. But in the society we live in, there is no relevance given to it. And rather, you have this huge plethora of interests that people take themselves like very, very seriously about them. And you know, you have these institutions that's so self-referentially serious, and they are like high priests even. It's probably saying, you know, well, a scientist doesn't understand the self, does he? Except perhaps a physicist, maybe. You know, because they look into science so deeply that they realize, oh goodness, well, I'm looking at a particle or a wave, or maybe both. So they don't. Then they think, oh well, this is not quite as it seems, not black and white. So they start making serious sort of queries into, well, who am I? What am I? What is the world? But most scientists don't. But they have these institutions that are so, or they think they are, very. Well, they are very. They speak in very grave tones. They can only put forward a paper if it's already been ratified by, you know, a great professor in the parampara of academia. So they really are just. It's Maya really means Maya. It really means it's a great trick. It's an impressive one. You know, like in a play, you are absorbed in a play only as much as you can suspend your disbelief, or a film. If you have an assembly of actors and one of them's naff, then the play kind of descends into you stop disbelieving. You're willing to suspend your disbelief as long as the acting is credible. But you have so a play often is only really as successful as its weakest actor. So Maya, but Maya has got a really good cast. Maya has got, you know, you look at these people and they're very, very credible actors on the Maya scene, you know, with their spectacles on their noses and, you know, dismissing anyone who has any point of view that disagrees with in the department of something or other in such and such university, probably Hoover or Cambridge. And not taken very seriously by Krishna, though, of course. Maya aparita jnana. The real intelligence is gone, actually taken away. Actually, that nature, you can call it many things. You can call bad agents, bad actors in the world. You can call them a number of things according to the current political designation, but really they are asuras. They have no sense of the higher, and so they're putting everything into this life, and whatever they have, they want to maintain. And you know, they even get the same ideas here in Hiranyakashipu. You know, I want to live forever. So Brahma gives him fulfills the wish. You know, I don't want to die in night or day. I don't want to die in or outside. And all these conditions he put up, got it sorted. Now, Brahma's confirmed it, but unfortunately he didn't have a contingency for Shingadev. Well, how could he have? A rather unusual incarnation. Nor man nor beast. That's a half lion that killed Hiranyakashipu. So but this pursuit is just perpetual. You've got it now. What's this book? You know, Sapiens. Anyone heard of that one? Same thing. It's just Frankenstein. I'm going to create life. And there's nothing new under the sun. It's like it's old wine in a new bottle. They were talking about this in the Puranas, thousands of years ago, same ambitions, same old, same old. As they say, as Shirley Bassey said, history repeating. Shirley Bassey, by the way, is not a word for celibacy. It's a slip of the tongue. When you know the nature of the... There is a very famous book that is studied by those in the Secret Service that was written in China, and it's called The Art of War, Sun Tzu. And it's studied actually by the CIA. It is how to know your enemy. So the first rule in there is that you must know your enemy. So not that, now as, say we're a good devotee, is a surit, is a friend of everyone. Now, if your friend was going through a trouble, you want to get to know what exactly is the problem. You know, are you not well? Have you got financial problems? Do you have problems getting up from Mangalati? Whatever the problem might be. But you can only find out and help them if you understand the nature of their problem. So to understand and to preach effectively to a friend, another spirit, another being on this in this human form, it's important to understand where they're coming from. And so although... may seem as a distraction from the focus of that Shukadev Swami mentions, that there's lots of things to discuss, but it's atmatattva that is the crucial thing, and those who are distracted, they don't have time for it. They don't see they assume that those who surround them can protect them. Nidra ariyate naktam vyavyena chavavaya divachate yaragjan kutumbu burnena va. So they're very distracted. But in order to help them, in order to reach out, you've got to know what they're thinking, where they're coming from. And as a strong, fixed up madhyamadhikari, your faith is very strong, doesn't matter what, and you can be absolutely certain that there's no philosophy in the world can defeat you. We have as our example for this the founding acharya of ISKCON, Srila Prabhupada. Numerous examples of him preaching to total atheists, scientists, Christians. And a lot of the time, well, at least in my day, it used to be that, you know, you've got to run away from this kind of thing because, you know, it might disturb your faith. No, you don't have, and neither do you have to rail against it. You don't have to rail against something that you know is wrong and, you feel a bit sorry for. Well, how come you're so caught up in that way of thinking? That's not going to get you very far. But so you don't have to browbeat anybody. And this is why, at the end of the day, yes, we do invite people to take up and recommend Krishna consciousness from our own experience. But massive, massive changes in society are affected by what great people do and demonstrate in the way they are. So, you know, yad yad acharati shrestas. So if we think of a few people that really appreciate Krishna consciousness in prominent positions, then you're going to get a big following. You're going to get a yad yad acharati shrestas. That means the shrestha, the best or the top ranking person, yajad acharati, whatever they do, tatad evit taro itara jana, then everyone else, the normal folk will tend to follow. So if we want an easy way to get to people, you just find a prominent person, introduce them to the benefits of Krishna consciousness, and when they take to it, then everyone will follow. And so that's a good, an obvious way of preaching Krishna consciousness apart from the others. And you do see that with when George Harrison was told by Srila Prabhupada, no, don't go and go join the temple, but you're doing a good job doing what you're doing. And fair, and sure enough, Jai Shishi Radhika Kulananda. But yeah, so but if you are dealing on a one-to-one basis, it's very important to understand how where someone's at, and to be a little bit enlightened as to what is going on in the world and the way things are developing politically and the way things are developing. It's not a contradiction. In fact, the last verse I was reading was a few weeks ago was the same point, that devotees are not outside of the sphere of influencing government even. And that was the example of Vidura, because Vidura was the chief advisor for Dhritarashtra, who was essentially behind the throne. Who did he ask for advice? Dhritarashtra was a politician. Arjuna and the Pandavas, great devotees, but they were involved in government, the Raj of the time. So it's definitely not the case that there isn't a need to get down as down and dirty with the awful ways that people, the weird ways people think about things. It's all so speculative, and but then you can actually you can relate. Let me try and give you an idea of how that might be some insight into your way of thinking from the point of view of the Bhagavad Gita or from this source of knowledge. So I'll finish there. Has anybody got any questions? Yes, sir. Govinda?
Thanks for your class, especially for the analysis of Virat Rup, which was a revelation for me. Just had a comment. You mentioned Stephen Fry.
Oh.
So the good news is, one Thursday, Haryanam Party was going past one of the offices in Soho Square, and Stephen Fry came out and we had a little brief conversation with him. So I feel the Bhaktilata Beej may be in his heart, and maybe next life he will become a devotee.
Yeah, 100%. What was he like? What was his response?
He was very gentlemanly and friendly, which I thought was surprising because he's so famous, he probably gets it so often, but he was kind of nice.
Oh.
But it wasn't a big conversation.
I'd written him off, but that's all right, I guess.
Stephen Fry had an interesting conversation with Jordan Peterson, a Canadian psychologist, which is very intellectual, but...
Jordan Peterson's a kind of Christian, right?
Yeah, it was interesting. Mm. Very intellectual. A bit speculative, but as we would expect.
I mean, I think my experience of getting into... Because I've been exploring over the last few years a study of Sanskrit. And we recite Sanskrit every day. And every verse in the Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, you get the Devanagari, which is at the top. And it's not actually that hard to read. But it's very important to we do talk about how the Sanskrit language is very developed. And this is a fact. A lot of the literature that's written in Sanskrit of old has a similar kind of literary devices as Western cult developed literature, particularly double entendre or double word meanings, because there's such a variety of word meanings. And what I found is it's really kind of informed the way I've understood verses that I was previously familiar with, and it's enabled me to understand them even better. For example, in this one I noticed, Parena Vishatav Svasmin Matreya Vishvashrigana. So Matreya is a word that, like the word meter comes from, it's measurement. So what another way of understanding this verse, part the translation is very clear, but to giving a little bit further insight into it, the Matreya, which means that in as much as, or to the degree that, the Lord enters the creation. To that degree, everything is animate. So I think when you get, you know, people like him, Stephen Fry, or people like Peterson, you know, then and you were talking to them, they wouldn't be very impressed unless you really had your personal understanding of this philosophy down. They could see through. If you were parroting, they wouldn't be impressed. They like the joy of the Hari Nam, you know, the love that devotees give. But if you actually enter into debate with them, you'd be a little stuck probably. Unless you had to impress these people, it's not easy. Because, you know, they are the Shrestas. They're the leaders. And they're not really the leaders for no, you know, paltry reason. They're because they're very clever. Doesn't matter how clever you are, of course, we understand that Maya still takes away knowledge. And you still can't see what the truth is. And you'll still be fooled. But if you want to reach out, then it's important to get Krishna consciousness very deep, so you can appreciate its profoundness, and that you can will be appreciated if you've appreciated it by even very erudite person. But I think there's hope for him. Maybe. Any other questions?
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. You talked about attachment. If you have attachment to Radharani, but you desire Krishna, do you still qualify to go back to Godhead?
Radharani? Well, I think it's through Radharani that you get Krishna's mercy, obviously. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Radharani's mood. Is in Radharani's mood. Now, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, actually, this is explained very... If you want to get into the esoterics, Lord Chaitanya actually explained that... When Krishna was very upset because Radharani had... he was missing Radharani when he was living in Dwarka. So he wanted to have... he didn't set it up, but his godmother, Poonamasi, arranged a play to be performed, which was a sort of a play about Vrindavan, Gokula. So he did this. She set up this play, actually directed by Narada Muni. And so in this play, Krishna comes on, and Krishna's sitting in the audience, but the actors that's playing is Krishna. It comes on, and Krishna's like, I can't figure out, am I here or am I up there on the stage? This is a good actor. Of course, he was a good actor because they were angels, actually. They were Gandharvas. And then Radharani comes on. And again, he's absolutely astonished at this. But what he says is when he sees Radharani on the stage, an actor, Radharani, he says, wow, you know, if I was Krishna, I'd be attracted to that. And he says, in fact, these, you know, what is it about these milkmaids that, I'm kind of like really, you know, what they get to see and experience. Now, that's quite an esoteric point, but that is Lord Chaitanya. He wanted to know what he, Krishna, was like from their point of view, because he was so astonished by his own beauty. What are the milkmaids, what do the gopis see? So, nothing wrong with... an interest in Radharani. I don't think you could knock it. Yes, Ru?
Oh. Hare Krishna. Nice class, Prabhu. In regarding of preaching to intelligent people, I to admit, sometimes I see YouTube videos and there's a Harinam and then devotees chanting and then some either preacher, you know, who know their own philosophy approach and asking about, but devotees simply doesn't know how to explain the thing. It comes out, makes me even ashamed to be part of this movement even, because usually as a leader he's a guest, very often from India, doesn't even speak English properly, and some intellectual approaches, and he just mumbling something, which is, of course, everybody who reads that, writes the comments, is obviously which side he'll take. So in that case, kind of, what do you think when that happens? Usually in Harinams, devotees come in, and then sometimes they approached, and then really what they mumble is just
mumble.
Either Krishna texting intelligence, even though this speech they know, and they just do not explain properly, and obviously we fail on that many times, many times I've seen that. So what do you think they should do?
Yes, well, the thing that stands out for most stories about the founder Acharya Prabhupada, about how he was drawing people to him, was his personableness. There's a genuine interest in others in the same way that you would take an interest on a very personal level. And I can only speak from my experience as well. I find the same thing. You cannot, you have to relate personally in order to have any effect. Dry debate, it's like a man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. You have to, it's like the army saying, you know, you have to win hearts and minds. And that's only done by being genteel, polite, friendly, genuinely friendly, like just being normal. And when there's that sort of relationship going on, then people, what they do then is, then they say, what's he at? What's he thinking? I've heard, you know, he goes singing on the street sometimes. What's that about? But it doesn't happen if you're not their friend. I mean, you know, if you're just, you know, talking at them. I mean, it's the same for anything, really. I mean, it doesn't, not just trying to convey something from the Bhagavad Gita. Or
just like any tip, like when this happened, then should you just admit, I just don't know, or something, just to leave some positive impression, otherwise you become like a fool. You know, just admit to person, I don't know, or whatever, shut me down. But then again, this watering our protest also, so anyway.
I think, yeah, you don't have to win the, you know, kind of like, did you get what I said? Or it's like a, well, look, my preaching involves, I've got to get at least two or three shlokas out of this one. rather than persisting like that, if you just go on the, just think, I'll go on the track, okay, this isn't going so well. Let me just befriend this person. And then they see you, they might see you standing there in devotee clothes with tilak. And they just say, oh, that's a nice person. And apparently, that's does them good. Well, yes.
If I may offer some comment on this, it happens all the time on Sankirtan, on book distribution. People in disguise of some science and intellectual pursuit, they enter into a debate. But in majority, their intellectual pursuit is in majority on emotional sort of a response to certain reality in their life. So we are able, we have the capacity to defeat them on their own battlefield, if you like. But then what happens is that by that defeat, you lose them as an individual. So I more now than ever are inclined to sort of just to establish some kind of a, like, you can see they are emotional. So you try to just grab their emotional identity and bring them closer to Krishna, saying, oh, you're a nice person, and this is what we do. We are not harming anyone. We're trying to present these lovely, lovely books, this and that. So in that way, you actually present that kindness, love, appreciation, and that is actually the right tool that brings people closer. Because I've done it in the past. You can defeat people. Even great intellectuals, there's a point where they crack. And if you're able to find that, and you just hammer it, then they crumble like, you know, house of cards. But if you rather fan the spark of their spiritual attachment for God in any shape or form they have, even if they're atheists, they're actually God conscious. But then that actually, I think, has a greater effect in terms of preaching. Because preaching means results. So results means someone has affection towards devotees or Krishna. So I would say that.
Yeah, no, if they can be, yeah. I mean, it is that. I was on Harinam in St. Albans on Saturday, and this chap who has a barber shop just next to where the Harinam always happens. I was just around the corner from there, Turkish barber shop. And as I was going, I'd walked past the shop, and he was sitting on the rails, and he said, what's that there? And he was just sort of laid back, smoking a cigarette. I don't feel like, you know, doing much more than saying, oh, it's the temple of God. And this is just, we mark it because we recognize it's sacred because God's inside us. And then we just started talking. If you were an enigmatic, you know, Shaktivesh avatar, you'd be able to, you know, instantly get them a chanting Hare Krishna and dancing right there and then. But I just talked about, how's your shop, you know. It just, because I was a bit stunned, you know, sometimes you get a bit stunned after a big Harinam, it's going to let you can't think straight. So I knew I could. So you know, it was a bit like that. So I thought, well, let me just befriend him. And then we just left. We had a chat about his shop and how it had been open, how it was doing. And I knew that in cutting hair, what happens to people is they get these elbow problems. And he was impressed that I knew that. Because they hold their hands up, like this all day, right? So then it really gives them issues here. So he was impressed that I knew that. And I said, as a parting word, I said, and, you know, look after those elbows. And then, it wasn't like Hare Krishna, you chant this, you know, today and you'll be fine. No, it was, yeah, no, but he left with a good impression. But one thing I don't know, though, if you met a towering intellectual, they're hardcore. I wouldn't, you can have a go at an intellectual discussion, but it's not an easy task with really like top guys, you know. I have to finish. Yeah, one more. Yes, Prabhu. Oh, waiting for the microphone.
I was in Watford. I remember when I was trying to distribute books, and a gentleman came out of the pub. He'd been in there with his friends, and he was sort of swaggering around. And he says, he looked at me, and he looked up because I had a dhoti on and everything. He said, "Look at you. You are nonsense." And that reminded me of Prabhupada. What Prabhupada said, "You're right." I said to him, "You're right. I am nonsense." And then he said, "But," and then he and I laughed at him. He started to say, "Why are you laughing?" "Well, it's because I am nonsense, but I'm trying not to be nonsense." And then he just became friendly. He was quite aggressive in his approach. Mm. But then he just, and I said, "Yeah, you're right." And we spoke for a while. I said, "Will you take a book then?" He says, just have a look, see what you think. And he said, no, I don't want a book. But he says, "I'll give you a donation." And he gave me a donation.
Mm.
So he made a bit of progress.
There's a sort of superficial initial assumption about what a devotee is.
Yeah.
And you can sort of break through just by, you know, being humble, I suppose. You've got to be humble. Because it's often a bit antagonistic.
But it just made me laugh, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it is very surprising. You can never tell who's going to turn around. You know, people with very stern faces suddenly light up.
Yeah, it's when he saw his mates coming out of the pub, then he disappeared and gave the donation.
Oh, nice one.
Yeah.
I think that's, I have to stop there.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Glory to Srila Prabhupada.